Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is Larry Jacobs, and welcome to today's K-12 edition of Education Talk Radio. Today is Wednesday, May 22nd, and it's an awfully dreary day here in southern Maine. Rainy, cloudy, miserable, but I guess it's good for the plants, so my wife's garden is very happy about that. We have a wonderful show for you today. We have our good friends from NCTE, the National Council of Teachers of English, coming on, and I'm going to bring Scott and Catherine on in just a second. I have a few little business items just to go over before we begin that interview. A, we're going to archive the show at our website, which is education-talkradio.org, education-talkradio.org. All of our shows are archived there. Please go over, and thanks so much for going over there all the time. We tweet, and we announce all our shows, plus retweet other things, et cetera, et cetera. We do that at EduTalk Radio, at EduTalk Radio, EduTalkRadio. So please go over there, follow us. We'll follow you in return. We like that. It builds our ego. And today's show, thank you very much to my good friends over at Heinemann Publishing in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. They are a full-service educational publisher, provider of absolutely excellent teacher professional development. We deal with a lot of their authors all the time. They come on, et cetera. They're wonderful friends of the show. Heinemann offers proven, reliable resources for today's instructional challenges by some of the world's best education thought leaders. Their resources for leveled literacy intervention, benchmark assessment, classroom materials, professional books, and professional development services literally transform teaching and lead to powerful learning, and it's all about the students. That's where it all settles in. For the best in education publishing and professional development, please go over to Heinemann.com to learn more. That's Heinemann, H-E-I-N-E-M-A-N-N, two N's, Heinemann.com, and keep in mind, they are dedicated to education, dedicated to teachers, and I know they are good friends also of NCTE, which is a beautiful segue, I'm so good at that, to my guest today. Good morning, Catherine.
Good morning.
How are you today?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having us on the show today.
You are always welcome here. NCTE is always welcome here. That's Catherine Pierce, folks. She's the writing specialist for grades 6 to 8 at the Y Down. Is that okay? Is that a good pronunciation, Y Down?
Yes, it is.
Y Down Middle School Literacy Curriculum Coordinator. That's where she is for pre-K-12 for the School District of Magnificent Clayton, Missouri, just near St. Louis. I hope the weather's good over there. She's a former elementary, middle school, and university teacher, and you can learn more about Catherine. Go to ncte.org. That's where all our guests are kind of located. Then /consultants and slash her last name, Pierce, P-I-E-R-C-E. Joining her is the one and only Scott Filkins. Hiya, Scott.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How you doing?
Great, thanks.
That's good. Scott is he's the grade 6-12 English and Social Studies Curriculum Coordinator at Champaign Unit Number 4 in Champaign, Illinois. And in his spare time, that's the school district, and then also he's the co-director of the University of Illinois Writing Project, and he's a former high school English teacher and instructional coach, and you can learn more about him. And I went over to this website. It's pretty cool. ReadWriteThink.org. ReadWriteThink.org, and to about, and then bio, and then Scott Filkins. It'll fill you in. That's a pretty cool website. I like it. And NCTE is NCTE.org. Okay, so we're all set. We're going to be talking about machine scoring. I love the title, Machine Scoring Fails the Test. It's the title of the new NCTE report on this topic, and I'm going to see if there's an easier way to do this, but just go to ncte.org, then /position/statements, and /machine_scoring. None of you will remember that, but I'm sure you'll find your way. So let's start. Ladies first, okay? Catherine, talk to me. What is machine scoring? What are we talking about here? Are we talking about IQ tests or what?
No. Machine scoring is when a computer is used to grade student writing. And so the computer is programmed to look for particular features in the student writing, and it runs through its algorithms and spits out some kind of a rating score based on the way it was programmed.
And spit is a real good word to describe that. Scott, are we talking about the English teaching version of the Terminator here? The machine taking over. What's going on?
I guess in some ways, my concern is what it really terminates, which is teacher agency and really a student desire to communicate through writing.
Well, you just said the word teacher. Did you say agency?
Agency, yeah, yeah.
What do you mean by that?
Sure, we really think of assessment as a place where a teacher should have a lot of agency, a lot of involvement. And when Catherine mentioned that a computer is programmed to look for certain things, it can only look for so many things, but a teacher has the capacity to pay attention to everything. And when you take the teacher out as the most important agent of assessment, some kind of odd things can happen.
Well, I agree with that. And by the way, I have to say, I was a teacher for 7 years, and I was a history teacher, not an English teacher. And I did what most of us do. I hated giving essay tests because I would have to read them. Okay, so I gave mostly non-essay tests in history, which probably was wrong, but I was a little lazy on that score. But when you're an English teacher and you're teaching writing, this is what you love to do. All right. So who came up? And I'll go back to Catherine here. Who came up with this cockamamie idea, and who's using it? Doesn't make any sense to me, to tell you the truth, Catherine.
Well, it's been around for quite a while, and I think there's a real interest in trying to figure out how to streamline and make the process of grading and analyzing and scoring student writing more objective and able to use on a large scale. However, as Scott pointed out, that really takes the teacher out of the equation, and we know that's a significant part of the assessment. But right now, machine scoring is used on things like large-scale standardized achievement tests, where students write an essay or they write a short constructed response or a short answer to a question, and then the machine is programmed to look for particular features. So if I had a short answer question about, say, something to do in the field, in the area of science on photosynthesis, the computer might be programmed to look for words like photosynthesis, respiration, transpiration, and as long as I had those words in my answer, the computer then would be programmed to say, yes, that's a high score or a low score.
Wait a minute, I am loving this. So basically the entire essay could read transformation, photosynthesis, and chlorophyll, and I would get an A?
Only on short answer ones. The computers are getting a little more sophisticated for longer essays. They can check for grammar and spelling errors, but of course you've probably known how at times on your word processor how the computer tells you that there's a grammar or a spelling error, and in fact you realize that it's not. Computers can be used to measure the length of sentences and where phrases are placed in those sentences. It can look for certain kinds of vocabulary. It can look for low-frequency vocabulary or sort of unusual words, and can be programmed to give writers credit for using overusing a thesaurus, if you will. It can also look for some elements of style. It cannot look for things like accuracy of content or humor or irony, the things that a human reader can do. There are some, you know, science fiction hopes that the computers will someday be able to read as well as humans do, but at this point, that's not the reality.
So Scott, get an A for writing The Great Gatsby?
That's a possibility.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the question.
I said, would I get an A for writing about The Great Gatsby, Gratte?
Oh. Yeah. I think Catherine brings up some really fantastic points in terms of what computers can do. I would categorize everything she said as things that are kind of formal in nature they're being used as a proxy for understanding, right? We want kids to know that writing is a way.
I love that.
Kids to know that writing is a way of expressing understanding, and computers can't assess understanding yet, or perhaps ever. As much as we want to have those kind of proxy components stand in for it.
And Scott, stay on for a second. Are we, because you're involved with both K-12 and the university, okay, as is Catherine to a certain extent, okay, but I'm curious, are we talking about K-12 here, or are we talking about post-secondary, or are we talking about all of that?
But we're talking about all of it, but I think really important right now, we're talking about the transition from high school to college, specifically the way that certain groups want to use machine scoring as a way of validating whether a student knows enough to be able to graduate high school. So exit exams, college entrance exams, those sorts of things. And when you think about what a computer can't do as a reader, that's not the kind of writing that we really associate with the kind of writing that happens in college, where things are longer, they're more sophisticated, they really are about depth of understanding. And I think really importantly, being able to handle ideas from multiple sources and integrating ideas. There's only so far that a machine can go there.
I'd
like to tag on.
Go ahead, Catherine. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'd like to tag on with what Scott said, because I think right now the most common uses of machine scoring are at that transition from high school to college. What we're hearing, and part of the reason why there's so much chatter on this topic right now, is that there's a keen interest in using machine scoring or artificial intelligence to grade student writing at the K-12 level as part of the annual assessment programs in schools and states or mandated by the federal government. And I think it's at the point where we're having, again, the large-scale writing assessments, and in order for it to work at that level, the writing task has to be so narrowly defined and specific in topic. It just really cuts out what we really want our writers to be able to do.
Well, to me, what you're saying is very obvious, and it doesn't make sense. And I'll tell you an interesting conversation I had with a friend of mine who is in the MOOC business. Are you familiar with that acronym?
Sure.
MOOC.
Sure.
Massive open
yep.
online courses so that 57,000 people can sign up, all right? Mm-hmm. And they my standing joke is, who wants to grade the essay test for 40,000 people? And the answer I found out is a machine, okay?
Yes.
And a friend of mine in the business said, we had 75,000 people sign up for the glories of Shakespeare, and then they machine graded, and many of them got A's and B's in Harvard or MIT or wherever it was courses. Okay, and to me, call me crazy, okay, but I think that's ridiculous. I think it's nuts.
We agree.
It's not measuring what needs to be measured. Okay?
Not at all.
It's so nuts.
Right now at the college level, I teach for a couple of area universities as an adjunct, both online and face-to-face.
Oh, cool.
And some area universities have programs available that will analyze a piece of student writing to determine to what extent they may have plagiarized. So the computer is programmed to look for overlap between what the student submitted in the paper and what is available in an online archive, if you will, of resources that might have been used for the assignment. And it doesn't take very long at all for students and teachers to figure out how to game the system, how to figure out what is the code, and how to just change a few things in your paper, and then that computer can't tell that you've plagiarized.
Yeah, I have a question. By the way, we're talking about machine grading of basically essay tests, of writing skills, I should say. Okay, it's the topic of the new National Council of Teachers of English report on the topic. You can go to ncte.org, and actually you can probably just Google machine scoring fails the test, and it'll pop right up. Catherine Mitchell-Pierce and Scott Filkins are our guests today, and you can always learn more at ncte.org. I have a question which is really interesting. K-12, more so than in post-secondary, who programs the computer? Scott, you answer that one. Go ahead, Catherine. Go ahead. It doesn't matter.
I think, you know, it's people who are working in the computer industry, and what they do is they take samples of student writing.
They're known as good writers, those guys.
Not necessarily.
Yeah, right. They're known as excellent writers with nuance, subtlety, and humor. Just read any given instruction book with your computer. They're wonderful. No, right. Proceed.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But one of the things that they do is they'll take, let's say that we've had 10,000 students respond to an essay prompt, and they'll have humans, like real life people, grade, say, 100 of those papers and score them, and then the computer will analyze what are the features that seem to be common across the scoring, and they create an algorithm that says I can make the computer score the essays the same way the teachers did with a very high degree of accuracy. That's the claim. But in fact, some of the studies show that it's not quite as accurate as they think it is, and that that only works if you're trying to score really basic level writing skills like spelling and grammar and conventions. And as we know, our goal in education is to have students really dealing with complex ideas and relationships among ideas, and the computers have a really difficult time being able to score those kinds of ideas.
Yeah, let me tag on to that, too. Teachers or humans might read 100 of those essays, and the computer might actually do an okay job of figuring out what was common among those, but all it takes is 100 first essay to be different and also good, and the computer doesn't really know what to do with that. And in a high-stakes assessment situation, which is what we're talking about, if that printed first essay is good, but the computer doesn't know why, and it gives the kid a low score, that kid has no recourse for saying there was some value in his or her writing. And that's really one of the big problems, is that this is not only a problem of scale, where people are just looking for a solution to deal with so many pieces of writing, but there are stakes attached to this that I have a lot of trouble trusting a computer to be the one making the judgment.
Agreed.
Well, I understand it. We're in the modern digital age and all this sort of stuff, but it's not a solution. It's just a too easy solution. That's not actually coming down to what we really need. What we're really looking for is you teach writing. All right. It's just so nuts. How do you gain, Catherine? Go back. How do you gain the system? I'm trying to get a 140 character PhD in biology. How do I gain? I want to write my thesis 140 characters. How do I game the system? I love this. This is great. Just write chlorophyll 30 times.
Well, that would be one. The other would be to make sure that you have clauses with commas, in different places in your sentences, and to make sure that you're using more sophisticated vocabulary. Doesn't necessarily have to be used well, but using words that are less common in the English language. If you're trying to game the plagiarism checking programs, really if you change about every fourth or fifth word in what you've copied, the computer has a hard time recognizing it.
That's actually bad news for me, because my professor certainly didn't.
I think it's also fair to say, though, that we do have assessments that are scored by humans, not necessarily teachers, and they are trained to read a large volume of papers in a very short period of time and to skim and scan and look for particular features that are going to be highlighted in the assessment process. And so it's very possible to have a complex essay read by someone who's not even knowledgeable in the field or about the teaching of writing, who's skimming and scanning for certain features. And then, as Scott says, those will be rated. And then the challenge is, or the problem is, how then do you challenge if you disagree with the scoring? It's difficult to come back and say, that's not an accurate reflection of either this piece of writing or of me as a writer overall. And part of the goal is trying to figure out
if I may say, Catherine, there is an instructional film about how to get back at the computer. That's 2001, A Space Odyssey.
Yes.
Okay, and if you watch what he did to Hal, Hal will sing Daisy for you as he's disconnected. Okay, I assume it's the same thing.
I think it's very similar.
Right. Here's an interesting question about all this. You have these MOOCs, and one of the things that's so popular about the MOOCs, this is a good side to this, okay, is that folks in India and Pakistan and China and all over the world can take these courses offered by great universities, Stanford, Harvard, MIT, and the others, et cetera, all right? But most of those people are not good writers in English, and that's a stereotype, of course, but let's just use that stereotype for a second. How in heck can a machine understand the nuances of struggle that a person in New Delhi who might struggle with, well, that's actually a bad example because they do, English is the main language, but let's say Pakistan, okay, that they may not be used to the language so well, okay, and now they have the trouble with the nuances, the phrases, the commas, all the things, the grammar, the syntax, all the things that you're talking about. How can a machine possibly grade it, even if they know the answer? Okay, they're going to get an F.
Yeah, and that's something that the research really does have a strong agreement on, that students, learners who are learning the language are unfairly penalized by a non-human reader because it doesn't know how to account for that. It sees things, and all it can call them are errors. So, I mean, your point is spot on, whether you're talking about an international context like with MOOCs, or we're really concerned about it just in terms of the students that we have in our classrooms.
Actually, I hadn't even thought of it that close. But of course, there are some classrooms in major cities with 25 languages. Kids learning the language. Throw that into a K-12 situation, machine graded. You've got a mess on your hands.
Yeah, absolutely. And a teacher can see a non-standard usage and think of it as an opportunity to teach. All a computer can do is call it an error.
Wow.
And I would say that it's not just a few classes in large urban centers. It's an increasing reality in most of our classrooms.
I work a lot with a lot of the groups who are involved in diverse education, let's call it, Council of Great Urban Schools, ALAS, all these groups out there. And I'll tell you, kids with different languages are literally everywhere from Towanda, Pennsylvania to Bismarck, North Dakota. You're absolutely right, to wherever you want to say. It's a challenge we have right now. So let's machine grade them and make it worse.
Well, and further penalize them. And put them in a track that says that you're not capable, when we know that oftentimes students who are learning other languages are so tuned into language structures that it won't be long before they can figure out a lot of them and make tremendous progress. But a machine-scored, large-scale, high-stakes assessment might close doors to them, and it's very difficult to get those doors back open.
Yeah,
and I love that phrase, high stakes, because your whole life can depend on some of this thing, or years of your life can depend on some of this.
Yes.
It really is high stakes. It can determine if you're moving forward in school, if you're moving to the college of your choice, okay, et cetera. It's unbelievable. Where are these being used? And I know you answered this sort of, but are they being used mostly in that transition from K-12 into post-secondary? Is that the epicenter of this, or is it beyond that?
I think currently that's the epicenter, but the proposal is, as we move into implementing the Common Core standards, there was a sense of a promise that we would be using tech-enhanced assessments that would have computers able to provide the assessment and score it and give almost instant feedback to students and parents and schools. And so the promise that the artificial intelligence field would have advanced to a level where they could actually do that on these large-scale assessments that are scheduled to go in place in the 2014-2015
yeah.
school year. And we're not there yet.
Go ahead, Scott. Yeah, you're saying something.
I think Catherine's absolutely right, but I think it's also important to know that there are dozens and dozens of commercially available quote-unquote readers that come with textbook adoptions. I know that there was a time that we adopted textbooks here in Champaign, and one of the features that we were kind of being sold on was this ability to have kids write to certain prompts and for feedback to come right away. That was actually my first interaction with machine scoring. So it's not just in these high stakes transition contexts. There are classrooms all over the country, probably almost on a daily basis, where kids are writing for a machine. So these high stakes places are why we're talking about it right now. But this kind of work is going on really, really everywhere.
And talk to me, and let's just focus a little bit on the actual report. Again, anybody can Google this, I assume. Machine scoring fails the test is the name of the new NCTE, National Council Teachers of English, report. Okay, machine scoring fails the test. I'm sure if you Google that, it'll pop up. That's probably the easy way. Who did you ask in the report to get your findings? And who actually ran the report? Was it Catherine and Scott wearing like black hoods with black candles on a high desk type thing? Or, right. I'm thinking of like Torquemada or something, you know. But
sure. So I mean, it was actually a group of us, some from the university setting, some of us from the K-12 setting, and all of us. Are really steeped in this, both practically and in the research base. So the report not only includes kind of our stance on machine scoring and some ideas for alternatives, but a big part of the report is an annotated bibliography of the research behind this. So it's not as if it was just our opinion on what's going on. It's very much grounded in the research and the scholarly work of the field.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you this question. Don't take it as offensive or anything else. Do you think you were biased, or was there enough of the opposite opinion or whatever taken into consideration as you did the report, Scott, Catherine, whoever? I know you can't see each other. Let me ask Catherine.
Okay,
you
sure.
You guys, go ahead, Catherine.
Right. I think across the profession, there are people, teachers who are saying, "Oh, I wish I could not spend hours and hours and hours grading papers," but I think at the very same breath, teachers are saying, "But oh, I learned so much about my students when I do, and as much as I may not want to sit down and do it this afternoon, I know that I am a better teacher because I spend time with those papers." And so I think that part of us, all of the people on the task force, are writers and teachers of writing, and so we appreciate the value of giving feedback to students, high quality value to students. But also as members of the larger profession, and particularly our organization, National Council Teachers of English, we're grounded in the position statements and philosophical orientation of the organization, which really values the complex process of writing. And right now, artificial intelligence cannot demonstrate the same level of value for the writing craft that humans can. And that, so absolutely coming into this, we had lots of concerns about it.
Yeah, and I'll be very upfront. We had a lot of conversations about what machine scoring can do. We know there are cases where a professor maybe with a section of 300 students wouldn't necessarily have his or her kids write at all if it weren't for this kind of technology.
Good
but
point.
That's a case where an individual teacher is making the choice to use it. I'm going to go back to that word agency. The kind of machine scoring we're talking about is being put upon people. It's not being used as a choice to make something work within a local specific context. So it's not as if the group says there's absolutely nothing that machine scoring can do. It's just that when we talk about our national context now, the way that it's being talked about is really problematic.
And, you know, I have to say something, what you just said, you know, because I obviously am a college graduate, and I remember those huge courses, particularly Biology 101, with the 500 kids in the class, okay, and pretty much nobody learned anything, okay? I hate to say it, all right? Nobody learned anything. None of us were biology majors. They shove you in there, and they show you a fetal pig on a monitor 60 yards away, all right? There's no interaction. You were talking about agency. There's no interaction. Those courses are nutty anyway. All right, I hate to say that, but it's true. All right, and I'll be the first to tell you that. You can pick up a little gleam of something, et cetera. All right, but writing, they're always giving the test where you just multiple choice and all that sort of thing, or fill in the blank, and we can get through it, or he or she can get through it quickly. All right, that's not the kind of writing we're talking about here. Okay,
no.
We're talking. And, you know, a class of 300 is different, but when you're talking about measuring kids, I mean, the point is, there may be a kid with a great sense of humor, okay, and satire, writing that won't be picked up by a machine, okay, which is absolutely crazy. Absolutely crazy. That's my opinion.
Especially because a student who's able to write in the way that you've just described is the kind of student that's doing the thinking and the manipulating of language that we want students to be able to do
exactly.
When they go to college.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, that's definitely
go ahead.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the ironies of this whole situation, that the national discourse is about raising standards and engaging kids in the kind of writing and thinking that Catherine just talked about, but the assessment tools that those very same organizations touting the need for higher standards aren't going to be able to look for evidence of that. And even more troubling, because they're so limited, they're going to stifle the kinds of writing potentially that teachers are having kids engage in. We know that high-stakes assessments shape instruction, and if an assessment tool can only be so sophisticated, the kinds of templated writing that are going to be kind of put out there as what we're looking for are actually not going to be the kinds of writing that we want college-ready kids to be able to engage in.
And that's already sort of starting to happen.
Well, it's removing the creativity. It's removing the creativity. We have enough challenge in this country, okay, with getting people to be really creative in school. That's a challenge, okay, because we got to educate a lot of kids. If you take away one more level of creativity, okay, you're not doing anybody a favor. Believe me, you're not doing anybody a favor. I'm thinking yesterday at Tumblr, the website got bought by Google, I think, or whoever for $2.5 billion, and the kid who dropped out of school made like $1 billion off it at age 26 or whatever. More power to him, for goodness sakes. But he's a creative kid, and school wasn't meeting his needs. If we move creativity further, okay, we're only hurting everybody. Hello? Right, Catherine?
Well, yes, and in a sense, the creativity that you're describing is someone who can engage in problem solving, and problem solving, and to use the cliche, outside of the box, to approach and recognize the potential to develop something or to take a position on something that hasn't been considered before. That's part of what's involved in creativity, and all of those levels of creativity, as well as the levels of thinking that are necessary to be successful as a college student or in the workplace, are those higher level abstract thinking skills. And focusing writing on the easily measured components of writing, grammar and conventions, sentence length, mm-hmm. word choice, those don't promote the level of thinking that we want students to engage in.
Yeah, I think we got to really rethink this whole thing at every level. It's just incredible. How long is the actual report?
A couple pages.
The report itself is 3 pages, and then the bibliography is several more.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
That was funny when you just said that. That was funny. That's good. So
well,
it's basically
doesn't it just make you think about that standard assessment question? Is how long does
exactly.
it have to be?
I hope I don't have to read 40 pages. God forbid. This is good news. I'll have my computer read it and summarize it for me. That's no problem at all. Right.
Exactly.
And folks should get Michelle, but you should read it. I mean, it's just incredible. By the way, it's not just English we're talking about. It's all these subjects. You got to have nuance and subtlety and understanding of everything. Oh, what can I tell you? It's unbelievable. Are you guys both going to go to the convention in November, the NCTE convention in Boston?
Yes.
Absolutely. It'll be my first time in Boston.
Wait a minute. Catherine, that sounded very dull. It sounds like you really don't want to
go.
Oh,
no, no. I was just sort of sighing in appreciation. I counted the other day. I think I've been going for like 33 years now. And it's like, I love to go. It doesn't even almost matter where, as long as I get to go hang out with other people.
I can assume you started going to the conventions when you were 7. Would that be accurate?
That's pretty close.
Years?
Pretty close.
Yeah, that's good. That's incredible. It's in Boston. I live in Maine, so I'll be down there.
Awesome.
Excellent.
Yes, you'll meet me. I'm extremely good looking. Until then, just believe I look just like Brad Pitt. Okay. I'll probably put on weight. I'm hoping to do that over the next few months. Okay. This is really good. You guys did a great job today. This is really fun, and I hope people. Machine Scoring Fails the Test at ncte.org. How do you want to sum it up? Let's go ladies first. Catherine.
I think I'd like to sum it up by saying there are alternatives to using these large-scale machine-scored tests. And one of the alternatives...
Humans. They're called human beings. Yes.
Absolutely. And how powerful to have groups of teachers having really difficult professional conversations about the writing in front of them and being able to talk about what are the features that we value and what do we do in classrooms to help our students write in the ways that we value. And that not only gives us the assessment information we need when it's handled in a particularly structured way, but it also raises the level of the teacher's understanding about writing and assessment and raises the level of instruction that happens in classes. And marching kids through a computer test doesn't raise the quality of instruction or my professional understanding at all.
Well summed up. Mr. Filkins?
Sure. I'll sum it up with just a little story involving my son. He's 9 years old, so he's in third grade. This is his first testing year. And I told him that that some testing companies use machines to score their writing, and even he knew that didn't make sense. But I just think about what it means to put a child in front of a computer and say, a human isn't even going to take the time to read this. we're going to let a machine decide the quality of your writing. And it really bothers me that we're going to ask kids to invest the time to create something and to demonstrate their understanding and craft with language, which is such an intensely human thing, and say that we're going to have a computer, you know, be the only one that looks at it.
I think the alternative is have a machine take the test.
They've
tried.
Sounds
good. Yep, we've decided they fail. Yeah, they fail.
Every kid brings his own machine, et cetera. Hey, you two were terrific. Thanks so much. This is a wonderful show. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you for having us on.
Yeah,
appreciate it. You're
very
more
much
than welcome, and come back anytime, and thanks a million.
Yep, take care.
Bye.
Yep, you too. Bye. Catherine Pierce from Clayton, Missouri at Wydown Middle School, and she's also an adjunct professor at several universities over near St. Louis and Clayton. Wydown Middle School Literacy Curriculum Coordinator, pre-K-12. Scott is the 6-12 English and Social Studies Curriculum Coordinator in Champaign, Illinois, Unit 4. Okay, he's also co-director of the University of Illinois right there, writing project, and they were both very involved in the new NCTE report, which I love. This was a great show. Machine scoring fails the test. Machine scoring fails the test. Thank you both. This was great. A big thank you, as always, to my pal Millie Davis over at NCTE, who always sets me up with great shows. I think I'm going to archive this show not only at education-talkradio.org, which is our K-12 site, but I think I'm going to do it at highereducationtalkradio.org, too. Okay, that's our higher ed site. All they're linked, education-talkradio.org. They're all linked, community college, too. We tweet at EduTalkRadio. And today's show, thanks again, Heinemann Publishing. Okay, for the best in educational publishing and professional development. You guys all know this. They exhibit, I know, over at NCTE. Heinemann.com, HEINEMANN.com. Go over there, learn more. Okay, there are resources for leveled literacy intervention, benchmark assessment, classroom materials, professional books. Their authors are always on with us. And professional development services. They're great. They transform teaching. They transform learning. They transform students. And speaking of writing, we just did a great show. It's archived on our site about Donald Graves. Okay, about Donald Graves, the great writing instructor. So that's a new book of theirs. So really cool stuff, Heinemann.com, Heinemann, HEINEMANN.com. Thank you, Catherine. Thank you, Scott. Thank you, Heinemann. Thank you, Millie. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Come visit our website. Tweet with us at EdTalk Radio. Have a great day.